Before I start speaking about this topic of Avas Yisrael, I just want to first ask Mechila for everyone in this room. I feel a little funny speaking about this topic without having to ask that beforehand, because I'm sure there are people in this room who I might have heard or inadvertently did something that might have disappointed them or upset them, and I just want to make sure that you know that it's only love I feel in my heart for everyone in this community. You know, we're trying our best, and we really do want to be there for everyone, so I hope you are mochel me, my husband, anything you might have done this year, and hopefully we can move ahead to a new year that's full of only good things, so just want to get that out of the way. All right. Ahmadinejad, Iran, Hamas, Hezbollah. We the Jewish people have no shortage of enemies right now, who each seek to complete annihilation and desire to destroy any trace of our people. Make no mistake about it, these threats are real and they're dangerous. As we find ourselves currently between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we're looking to the year ahead for our people. There is so much that we have come to take for granted, including the state of Israel and the ease with which we can visit the Kotel and send our kids to Israel for their year. While these things seem so definite and sure, the truth is that our future is precarious and very uncertain. Over 2,200 years ago, there was another Jewish community that felt safe and secure in their future. That was until one day an evil man proposed their extermination, and the king of that time agreed. What made that Jewish community vulnerable, susceptible, and in danger then is the same thing that makes us exposed and in danger today. We're all familiar with the Purim story, when Haman, the Hitler of his generation, first approached King Ahasuerus about his plan to kill a certain nation. He didn't identify them by name. He merely described them. Hein am mufuzar mufurad bein ha'amim. They are a nation that is scattered and dispersed among the people. The way he characterized the Jewish people as divided and not united was the reason why he knew that he would be able to carry out his evil plan with lots of success. You see, as long as the Jewish nation were fragmented and divided, it was a no-brainer to try to attack them. They were at their weakest and their most vulnerable, and surely he would succeed in bringing them down. The story continues, and Queen Esther gets wind of the evil plan. The first thing she does is send a message to Mordechai, the leader at that time of the Jewish people. Lech kenos es kol ha-yehudim. Go right now and gather up all the Jews. Fasting is good. Tearing kriya is good. Crying and davening to Hashem is all good, but nothing will help us against our enemies if we are doing all these things, but not as a united people, as a cohesive community. They know how vulnerable we are when we're apart and divided, and it is only if we gather together and become unified do we stand a chance against our enemies. We are now on the eve of Yom Kippurim, the holiday that is surprisingly most similar to the holiday of Purim. And we must learn from our history and from the Purim story that keeps repeating itself in every generation. This Yom Kippur, thousands of Jews around the world will be gathering in shul to daven and to cry out to Hashem. But our cries and our prayers will mean little if we don't have achdus and if we are divided. The greatest effort we can advance to secure our collective future is to practice Ahavat Yisrael, to love all Jews in our speech, in our behavior, and in our daily lives. Let's face it. The Jews are a factious people. The cute saying, two Jews, three opinions, loses its humor when we understand that our divisive tendency has always been our downfall. What is one of our greatest beefs as parents with our children? I don't know about you, but mine is when they fight. It makes me crazy. I want so badly for them to get along and be best friends, and I know they have the potential, and it's so much more harmonious and peaceful in the house when they're sitting in the playroom and playing nicely their little games. It's just so nice. And when they're on good terms with one another. But there are times when they're fighting, and the only way to teach them a lesson is by punishing them. I'll put them in separate rooms, or I'll take something they love away from them to prove the point and teach them a lesson. Say from Hashem's perspective, we are His children. When we don't get along with our brothers and sisters, it upsets Him and it brings disharmony and unpleasantness into His world. In order to teach us our lesson and restore peace, He needs to punish us. He needs to send us off in different directions, into exile, or He takes something away from us, whether it's our health, world peace, or our precious Beis HaMikdash. When we are harmonious and loving towards each other, the world is a much happier and safer place. The Talmud states the destruction of our holy temple, our holy Beis HaMikdash, and the beginning of this torturous 2,000-year exile is attributed to one thing, hatred among Jews. We know that all Jewish people were not created the same. We have different personalities. We come from different backgrounds. We have different religious and political leanings. We have different looks, different voices, and skills. But Hashem not only expects us to get along and tolerate each other, He obligates us to love each other. As we know in the Torah, in Sefer Devarim it says, "Ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha," love your friend as yourself. It is a Torah obligation that we love our fellow man. And this mitzvah makes sense, because as we see from generation to generation, when we fail at this mitzvah of loving each other and being unified and together, we plunge into an abyss of galus, of exile. We are faced with terrorism, with war, anti-Semitism. Think about it. If we don't love each other, and if we can't even tolerate each other, why should our enemies, or why should non-Jews, or people not part of our nation, love us at all, or tolerate us? Without this love between us, there'll continue to be suffering and pain in this world. Tonight we're here to learn together and find out ways that we can fight back and protect ourselves against our enemies, and that we can safeguard ourselves and our children against the threats that surround us. We live in a time that people are looking for skulas, good practices that will help us with parnasa, with shalom bayis, with good health and nachas from our children. I want to make it clear tonight that more powerful than a million red strings or keys and challahs is practicing Ahavas Yisrael, being kind, courteous, loving, sensitive, caring, and attentive to our fellow Jews. Let's first define what exactly is Ahavas Yisrael. What does loving our people truly entail? Ahavas Yisrael is really a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, loving your neighbor as yourself. How can the Torah tell us whom to love? Hashem could tell me how to behave, what laws to keep, how to run our lives, but is it fair to tell us how to feel? The Rambam says that when it comes to the commandments of loving Hashem, that in truth the obligation to love Hashem is just to know Hashem. If we take the time to see His incredible world, study His magnificent Torah, and understand His incredible science, we will automatically be drawn to Him and feel a sense of love. I think perhaps the same is true when it comes to loving our neighbors. For every human being we come into contact with, there are things about that person that we share in common, that we admire, that attracts us to them. But then there are those things that we don't love so much, and we reject and dislike. Ultimately, the choice is ours to decide which part of that person to focus on, the things we have in common, or the things to divide us, the things that we don't like and that divide us. If you think about it honestly, every single person has redeemable qualities and lovable features. For some, the lovable stuff is right on the surface, and for others, you have to dig deep to find it. The mitzvah to love is not really an obligation to feel, but it's an obligation to find. To find something lovable within each and every person that we meet and focus on that. To fully accomplish this mitzvah of Ahavas Yisrael, we must flip off our natural inclination to judge and distrust others. And we must make the effort to love all the Jews in the world, no matter how much they differ from us. Sounds difficult, but we'll try to break it down a bit tonight to make it possible. We have to understand that our fellow Jews are our brothers and sisters. Each and every one of us is a child of Avram Avinu, which makes us all part of the same family, albeit a diverse one. Of course, we should all love humanity, love everyone who surrounds us in this world, and show respect and honor to all people we come into contact with. But it's different when it comes to fellow Jews. Isn't it interesting how when we're on vacation somewhere, taking a trip to some remote location, and suddenly we see someone with a yarmulke or a woman who clearly looks Jewish, and we get so excited! We can't believe it! We'll say hello to them, nod our heads, you know, say there's a mincha minyan at the, you know, Magic Kingdom at 9 o'clock. It's very exciting to see one of our own. And it's such a thrill because we're part of that same elite club. We're part of the same family. We feel a special connection to them. There's a unique kinship and a bond that we share, even without knowing or speaking one word to that other person. And we would do anything for our own family. You know, in halacha, when it comes to loaning and the halachas of taking interest, one's allowed to charge interest to a non-Jew, but not to a Jew. Why is interest forbidden? Is it because it's unethical? Clearly it can't be unethical, because then we would be forbidden from charging interest to a non-Jew as well. Rather, the reason behind this is very simple. Would you ever hesitate to give your brother or your sister a loan if they were in need? Would you hesitate for even 1 second? And would you ever in a million years charge them for it? Your brother or sister, your nephew or niece, is your own flesh and blood. Of course you would help them out and not charge them interest. We have an unwritten obligation to one another and a devotion that is steadfast and doesn't waver. Jews today are a whopping less than 1% of this population in this world. We are a small family, and we're all we've got. So the big question tonight is, how do we accomplish this notion of loving all Jews? It's hard enough to love everyone in our own family, let alone our whole community and Jews all around the world. How do we act in a way that will promote Ahavas Yisrael and that will improve our own midos in the process? I want to share with you four areas of our lives in which we can practice Ahavas Yisrael, and hopefully we can walk away with realistic ways to improve on the practice of loving all Jews. The Apter Rebbe was known by a sefer called Ohev Yisrael, and by the fact that he was a tremendous Ohev Yisrael. He just loved all Jewish people. He was also known for the fact that he was able to find an allusion to Ahavas Yisrael in every single parsha in the Torah. One day, one of his chassidim came to him and challenged, "Where can such an allusion be found in Parshas Balak? There is definitely no love taking place in that parsha." He was pretty sure he stumped his Rebbe and there'd be no answer for him. But the Rebbe looked at his Talmud in surprise and told him, "But there's such an obvious allusion to Parshas Balak, to Ahavas Yisrael in Parshas Balak. The name of the parsha is Balak, and Balak stands for the first three letters of V'ahavta L'reacha Kamocha." So the student looks at his Rebbe incredulously and says, "Rebbe, with all due respect, that's ludicrous. The first letters are Vav, Lamed, and Kaf. And in Balak, they're Beis, Lamed, and Kuf. They're completely different letters. How can you possibly correlate the two and find that allusion?" The Apter Rebbe responded with a profound insight and said, "You have been my chassid all these years. Haven't you learned yet that when it comes to Ahavas Yisrael, to this important mitzvah, you can't be so precise about the exact letters?" The Apter Rebbe knew very well how to spell Balak, but he was trying to teach his precious Talmud a lesson, that when it comes to Ahavas Yisrael, there must be elasticity. We must cut people flack, be a little more tolerant, open-minded, flexible. People don't have to be exact and perfect. We have to bend a little. Someone who is too precise and too rigid with others can never come to complete fulfillment of this mitzvah. The first step in working on Ahavas Yisrael is working on ourselves. If we're judgmental on negative people, we will treat others and think of others in the same way. We need to first rid ourselves of grudges, of anger, fear of other people, resentment, hatred, intolerance, and inflexibility. Because these feelings will never allow us to love others. We're now approaching Yom Kippur, and a recurring theme in our davening are the different roles that Hashem plays in our lives. One of these roles is as a shofet tzedek. He is the ultimate judge, and he's making the ultimate decisions of our lives and evaluating us from his kisei hakavod up in the sky, up in Shemayim. We have to realize that we are not the judges sitting on our thrones and judging each other. That's God's job, not ours. We must stop being the accountants, tracking everyone else's mistakes, shortcomings, and inadequacies. Let's just worry about ourselves and how we're each doing, and not hold others to such high standards. Remember, V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, love others as you love yourself. When it comes to ourselves, we always give ourselves the benefit of the doubt. We always judge ourselves favorably, and we cut ourselves huge slack. We just need to do the same for others. Zen teacher Alan Watts says, "Peace can only be made by those who are peaceful, and love can only be shown by those who love." If you are an argumentative and intolerant person, if you talk Lashon Hara and you slander others, if you don't judge other people favorably, you'll never be able to bring yourself to respect, tolerate, and embrace others. I want to share a poem with you that I've always loved and felt it's so poignant and sad in a way, because I believe it was written a while ago, but it still holds true today, even more so than ever. I used to keep this poem hanging in my room in my year in Israel in college. I was going through a year of growth, and I really felt this poem could inspire me on how to deal with people as I grow up and move on with my life. So this poem is about how important it is to not judge others and how to embrace and accept all Jews, no matter their affiliation, background, or the way they look and appear. "'Twas the night of the Geula, and in every single shtiebel, sounds of Torah could be heard, and coming from every kind of yidel. This one in English, some in Hebrew, some in Yiddish, some saying pshat, and some saying a chiddush. And up in Shemayim, the Eibishter decreed, the time has come for my children to be freed. Rouse the Mashiach from his heavenly birth, have him get in his chariot and head down to earth. The Mashiach got dressed and with a heart full of glee, went down to earth and entered the first shul he did see. I am the Mashiach, Hashem has heard your plea, your geula has come, it's finally time to go free. They all stopped their learning, this was quite a surprise, and they looked at him carefully with piercing sharp eyes. He's not the Mashiach, said one with a grin, Just look at his hat, at the pinches and the brim. That's right, cried another with a grimace and frown. Who ever heard of Mashiach with a brim that's turned down? Well, thought Mashiach, if this is the rule, I'll turn my brim up before I go to the next shul. So he walked right on over to the next shul in town, sure to be accepted since his brim was no longer down. I'm the Mashiach, he cried as he began to enter. But the Jews wanted to know first if he was left, right, or center. Your clothes are so bad, black, they cried out in fright. You can't be Mashiach, you're much too far right. If you want to be Mashiach, you must be properly outfitted. So they replaced his black hat with a kippah that was knitted. Wearing his new kippah, Mashiach went out and said, no difference to me what I wear on my head. So he went to the next shul, for his mission was dear. But he was getting very frustrated with the people down here. I'm the Mashiach, he cried, and they all stopped to stare. And a complete eerie stillness filled up the air. You're the Mashiach? Just imagine that. Who ever heard of Mashiach without a black hat? But I do have a hat, the Mashiach then said. So he pulled it right out and plunked it down on his head. Then the shul started laughing, and one said, where's your cup? You can't have Mashiach with the brim that's turned up. If you want to be Mashiach and be accepted in this town, put some pinches in your hat and turn that brim down. Mashiach walked out and said, I guess my time hasn't come. I'll just return to where I came from. So he went to his chariot, but as he began to enter, all sorts of Jews appeared from the left, right, and center. Please wait, do not leave, it's all their fault, they said. And they pointed to each other and to what was on each other's head. Mashiach just looked sad and said, you don't understand. And then started up his chariot to get out of this land. Yes, it's very wonderful that you all learned Torah, but you seem to have forgotten a crucial part of our Masorah. What does he mean? What's he talking about? And they all looked bewildered, and they all began to shout. Mashiach looked back and answered, the first place to start is to close up your mouths and open up your hearts. To each of you, certain Jews seem too firm or too fry. But you see, all Jews are beloved in the Abishter's eye. And on his way up, he shouted, if you want me to come, try working a little harder on your Avat Chinam. The first step towards loving all Jews is to change ourselves and rid ourselves of all those negative behaviors that distance us from people. We need to start working on our personalities to make ourselves more open-minded, tolerant, and loving people. We must change ourselves and how we view other people before we could come to respect and love them. After working on ourselves and how we judge others, we have to consider how we relate to the people closest to us, to our husbands, our children, our parents, and siblings. Sometimes it's much easier to exhibit Ahavat Yisrael to strangers than it is to those closest to us. But we must remember that Ahavat Yisrael begins with our immediate family, with our own flesh and blood. Do we regard them as our equals? Are we nitpicky about their habits, personalities, character flaws, daily behaviors? Do we talk about these members of our family who are most precious to us in a negative way to others? How terrible. They can't trust us. Who can they trust? We would be patient, calm, and supportive of a child that needs our help, but are we that way with our own children when they need us? How many of us find the ability, and I'm totally in this category, to make a three-course chesed meal for a friend who just gave birth or who's sick, but throw mac and cheese at our family because we're too tired to cook? Do we have more energy to go out with our friends and get dressed up for outsiders than we do for our own husbands? We have to remember that chesed begins at home. Ultimately, these are the most important people in our lives. Every Jewish home is a Beis Mikdash Ma'at, a mini temple. Our Shabbos tables are the Shulchan, our bedrooms are the Kodesh Kedashim. When we don't treat people in our own homes with love and respect, our own Beis Mikdash Ma'at collapses and becomes destroyed. Only Ahava, love, and peace can make it complete again. We also must keep in mind that our children are our mirrors, for better or worse. They are always looking at us and watching what we're doing and saying. And they often copy us because they think, hey, my parents doing that or saying it, it must be okay. We're their role models. The way they see us interacting with our own spouses is how they will interact with their spouse in their own marriages one day. The way they do or don't see us doing chesed for others in our home is how they'll do or not do chesed in their own homes. We must model the correct behavior, not just for ourselves and for our own self-development and growth, but also for our children to see and learn from and emulate later on. The next level of Ahavat Yisrael is in our community. I want to tell you a story. It's a story that actually took place and that I read about in one of the Small Miracles books. One winter in New Haven, Connecticut in 1956, there was a terrible blizzard, an unprecedented 25 inches of snow. school was canceled. There was no public transportation. No one was leaving their homes. It was just impossible to go anywhere. Beverly Liebowitz had given birth to her first and only son, and on that day, the snowstorm was to be her son's bris. She was fairly new to her community and did not know too many people, but nevertheless, she spent 2 days cooking and baking and working on preparing a beautiful spread of delicious food to serve at the bris, and she spent time cleaning her house to make sure it was sparkling and shining for her guests. Unfortunately, her own family was unable to come to her simcha due to the terrible weather conditions, but she hoped some local families would show up. On the day of the bris, she waited and waited and waited. Thankfully, a minion of men showed up, and the bris was ready to begin. Beverly stood alone in her living room, disappointed, but ready to bring her son into the bris of Avraham Avinu. All of a sudden, there was a knock at the door. A woman named Judy had arrived, covered in snow and schlepping along a bunch of kids. Beverly did not know her, but recognized her from around the neighborhood. Judy heard this woman, Beverly, was making a bris, had a feeling that not many people would be able to show up, and so she made every effort to come with her daughters and be there with her for her family, for this family. Same with Sarah and her family, who arrived shortly after, and then Miriam, who came a few minutes later. Beverly was overwhelmed with gratitude and simcha at having these three women there to celebrate this momentous occasion with her. The story would be remarkable even if it ended at this point, because the chesed and avas Yisrael that these three women demonstrated by showing up to that bris on that snowy morning was remarkable. Their compassion and sensitivity towards this new mother was extraordinary. However, there's more to the story, because it turns out that Beverly wasn't the only one to be filled with bracha and simcha on that day. Only a story you could find a small miracle. Because 9 months after her own son's bris, she had a very busy morning where she had to rush to three different brises all over town. Her first stop was to the local shul where her new friend Judy, who believe it or not, and this is what the story says, had six little girls in rapid succession and was now having her first son's bris. Next, Beverly ran off to a small catering hall where Sarah, who had two teenage children and then suffered from secondary infertility for 8 years, now had her baby boy's bris. And then she headed over to Miriam's house. Miriam, who was childless for 10 years, was finally celebrating the birth of her first child. 9 months after these women braved the storm and exhibited such Ahavat Yisrael by attending Beverly's Simcha, Hashem did a chesed for each of them and blessed each of them with simchas of their own. Even though the last part of the story is incredible, we have to know that not every story of Ahavat Yisrael will yield these kind of results. They need to be done regardless of reward or outcomes. They need to be done simply because we care about our fellow Jew, and we want to enhance and enrich the lives of others. The reward we get from seeing their lives change for the better because of our efforts is the greatest reward we'll see. What I find amazing about this story is that between the fact that there was a terrible thunderstorm outside, and the fact that these women did not know Beverly at all, they had absolutely no obligation to go to her son's bris. In fact, the average person would think it was a little weird and kind of sketchy for them to show up at a stranger's home under these circumstances. But these women could have easily stayed at home that early morning, drank their hot cocoa, read a good book, snuggled up under their warm blankets. But no, they went out of their comfort zones and made it their business to be there for a fellow Jew. The mitzvah of Ahavat Yisrael is to love each and every Jew, not just your good friends, neighbors, and acquaintances. It means going out of your way and out of your comfort zone for people who may be different from you, or for people who you may not even know. Making a meal for your good friend after she's a baby is very nice of you, but it's not a super incredible chesed. Making a meal for someone who just moved into the community, sent her kids to a different school than you, and you've never met her before? Now that's Ahavat Yisrael. Paying a shiva call to your close friend who lost someone is important. But going to comfort and console someone that you barely know because you understand that they suffered a loss, that's Ahavat Yisrael. And saying good Shabbos and schmoozing after shul with your friends and neighbors is really great. But going over to someone who looks new, lost, and displaced, that's the essence of Ahavat Yisrael. What's sad is that at the times when a real chesed need comes up in the community, it's often difficult to find people to extend themselves and help out. A few years ago, there was a family here who had a baby. They had been living in the community for a few years, but were very quiet and had not made many connections and friends. The chesed committee had an impossible time coordinating meals for them. People just weren't available or interested in helping out. It was sad that the people who were called were the same people who jumped at the opportunity to cook for their friends. We have to realize that the people who are alone or different than us are definitely the people we need to help out. They're the ones who should be reached out to the most. They need to feel loved, acknowledged, and cared for. If they don't feel it from their own community, where will they ever feel it? We need to reach out to everyone, not just people our own age, in our own kids' schools, at the same religious levels as us, in our meet group, in our Rowan Shul. There are people all around us who are part of our family, and we must treat them as such. We all pride ourselves in the fact that we do Haknasas Orachim each week or every month. We have a table full of guests after we cooked up a storm all week. But we have to realize inviting our friends to our Shabbos table is not the essence of Haknasas Orachim. Again, it's very nice, and I'm not telling anyone tonight not to have close friends. But what I'm telling you is to step out of your comfort zone one Shabbos a month, or more or less frequently. It's really up to you. And invite someone different than you, someone you don't know, someone new to the community. A young family can invite an older couple or single to their home, and vice versa, an older couple can invite a young family into their home and get to know them. There is so much we can all learn from different generations. We should take advantage of the opportunity we have here of living in a community where we have every age group. You know, years ago in this community, when a young family moved in, all the other young families were so excited, and they right away got to know them, befriended them, and helped them integrate into the community. Baruch Hashem, our community is now growing, which is a great thing, and we're all thrilled about it. But with this growth are coming some challenges, and I believe we can fix them. Why is it that a family who sends to one school can't be friends with a family who sends to another school? Our young families have become so school-centric, to the point that a new family can move into our community, send their kids to one school, and never meet a family from a different school. That's absurd! There's no reason for this divisiveness and exclusivity. Everyone has the right to choose the best school for their children, but that choice should not divide us. There is so much we can gain from each other. There is so much we can gain from meeting new people. I think one of the reasons many of us have specifically chosen to live here in this community is because of the warmth. And I'm not talking about the hot weather. I'm talking about the warmth and the caring and the closeness that we share here that you can't find in many other communities up north and beyond. Let's not allow the decisions we make, whether it's a school we send to, the development we live in, the minyan we daven in, and the list goes on, to define us and to divide us. We are one community, and we need to promote achdus and make every effort to reach out to all families and singles who live here. And now this year our community is starting a huge effort towards outreach. Talk about leaving our comfort zones. But as my husband so beautifully explained in Shabbos Shuva Drasha, there is no greater demonstration of Avas Yisrael than introducing our brothers and sisters to the beauty of Judaism, bringing them into our homes, and showing them warmth, love, and care. The last category I want to focus on this evening is sharing Avat Yisrael with Jews all around the world. You may ask, how can I show love to someone miles away? The answer is simple. I can minimally fulfill the Torah's charge of Nose Ba'ol Im Chavero, feeling another's burden and pain. The fact that Gilad Shalit is in his fifth year of captivity can't just be another fact or piece of information. It has to affect us. We can place a permanent seat for him at our yontif table to keep him in our minds, or we can say a special paragraph of Tehillim daily until he's released. There's no right thing to do, but the key is that we do something to feel his pain and his family's pain. We all learned of the four Israelis killed 2 weeks ago in cold blood. We probably went right back to whatever we were doing without missing a beat. And that's normal because we live here, we have normal lives, busy lives. But we must feel the pain of Jews around the world when they suffer. Let me share a letter to the editor with you from the New York Times, written by my sister-in-law's cousin, Jenny Goldstein, who lives in Neve Daniel. I am a proud former resident of Brooklyn who moved to Israel 3 years ago with my family. For some, the terrorist attack in the West Bank on Tuesday killed four nameless settlers. For us, the attack snuffed out the life of the loving special education nursery teacher who greeted our developmentally delayed son with boundless love and dedication every day for the last 2 years. Kochava Eben Chaim was on her way home to her own family after attending the nursery's welcome back party, at which her adoring special students, who are incapable of understanding hate, decorated new school bags with her just 1 hour before her murder. In Hamas's cynical attempt to derail the peace talks, it wasted a life devoted to hope. The people who died were not just a statistic. They were real people who led remarkable lives and made a difference in the lives of others. They are our brothers and sisters, and the fact that their lives were taken should affect each and every one of us. During World War II, Rebbetzin Cutler changed her way of drinking tea. A popular manner of drinking tea among the Europeans was to place a cube of sugar between the teeth and strain the hot liquid through it. For the entire duration of the war, Rebbetzin Cutler did not put a single sugar cube into her mouth. Why? Because she felt Jews were suffering in Europe, and she couldn't bring herself to drink her sweet tea while other Jewish lives were so bitter. Making a small, seemingly insignificant change in our lives to display concern for others is a great expression of Ahavas Yisrael. One example is that while so many families in our community are suffering from this poor economy, maybe others can cut back on something, simply to show solidarity, concern, and sensitivity. Another meaningful way to show care for others, even from a distance, is to daven for them. Our davening cannot be exclusively focused on our needs, our wants, our lives. We have to daven for others and ask Hashem to ease their burdens, heal their illnesses, and provide for their parnasa. We need to take the time out of our day to daven. And we're all busy, and we all have very busy lives and kids and work and everything that entails to run a household. But we all could find the time, and in this day and age, we must make the time. Why should Hashem help out the Jewish people if we can't even find the time to ask Him to? Our community has Tehillim groups that daven for cholim, for MIAs, for shidduchim, for fertility, and not just for people in our own communities, but we get names of people from all over who need our prayers. We must take the time to pray, to ask Hashem to help our people, and to sweeten the lives of so many of us who are suffering all around the world. Now we can better understand the beautiful prayer and popular song Achenu. Achenu kol beis Yisrael, anesunu batzaru v'ashivya ha'omzim b'en b'yam u'b'en b'yabasha ha'makom, yiracham aleinu v'yotzi mitzara l'rvacha u'me'afela liyora. Our brothers, all of the people of Israel, who were given suffering, and were given, they're in captivity, or they're somewhere lost around the world, and they're standing, they're either in the sea or in the land, wherever they are. Hashem should have rachmanis on them. He should have compassion on them and take them out of the tzara, out of the suffering, and into the light, into the peace, and take them from the darkness into the tranquility, into the light. And it should happen soon. I want to end tonight by reviewing what we talked about and a few practical takeaways. First, we must remember that when we are not a unified people, we are vulnerable to our enemies. And we will never get our Beis HaMikdash rebuilt, no matter how much we cry, fast, and pray. We are obligated by Hashem to love our fellow Jew. We are all part of the same family. And when we don't get along, there's no peace in Hashem's home. Before we can possibly begin to love others, we have to change ourselves and the way we view people. We have to stop judging and just love people, regardless of the different opinions and affiliations. Before we can do chesed with others in our community or throughout the world, we must remember that chesed begins at home. And we have to treat our own family members with respect and love. When it comes to our community, we have to be involved in helping all families, and not just our friends and the people similar to us. Ahavas Yisrael means going out of our comfort zones and being there for all of our brothers and sisters. This extends to our family across the globe. If anyone in Klal Yisrael is suffering, we must feel their pain, daven for them, and do what we can to make a difference in their lives. Here are some practical takeaways I'd like to leave you with. Smile. Very simple. A great rabbi once said that a person's face is Rishus Harabim, a public property, and we have no right to carry a frown around, be down or negative, because it affects other people. Let's try to smile at one another, especially at people we don't know. And let's compliment and praise other people. A nice word goes such a long way. It takes no effort, and it makes people feel great. You could be the cause of brightening someone's mood and giving them a great day just by giving them a compliment or making them feel good. Same with Hakaras HaTov, when you show gratitude. It's so important that we express our appreciation to people. Those are the moments that connect us and make us feel like family. Basic kindness is such a big part of Ahavas Yisrael. On a daily basis, we need to show everyone we come into contact with respect, care, gratitude, appreciation, praise, and love. Chesed. One of the biggest points of pride of our community is our amazing Chesed Committee, headed by the one and only Michal Marcus. There are so many ways to volunteer and so many opportunities to get involved. You can sign up tonight to serve on a committee or speak to Michal to find out more. And most importantly, and this is a very important point, if you have a Chesed need, please don't hesitate to accept help. Please allow us the opportunity to show you Ahavas Yisrael It's our obligation, so we need those opportunities. We're all one family. We're all here to help each other, and we know that you will do the same for us. So please, let us help you. Shidduchim. Another great opportunity for Ahavas Yisrael is to make an introduction for someone who you know is single. We have a committee in place, taking information and trying to make matches. If you're looking for a shidduch, fill out the form tonight, or simply take a moment to think of someone you may know who needs a shidduch, because while it'll only take you 2 minutes of your time, you could literally change a life. Ahavas Yisrael groups. We're very excited to follow up this class and launch a series of Ahavas Yisrael groups. These groups are taking place in cities and communities all around the world and have been a huge success so far. Each group will be made up of a small group of women to follow a set of curriculum, share experiences, and work together on improving Ahavas Yisrael. We have many great teachers in place, and we're trying to accommodate everyone in their busy schedules. We'll be offering different options of times, locations, everything, so there is no excuse for anyone not to participate in this effort. Please sign up tonight, and we'll send you more information after the Chagim. I encourage you to take advantage and be part of an incredible project that will hopefully bring back the unity in our community. We all want Mashiach. We are desperate to see redemption, happiness, and prosperity. If we do not work on ourselves and the way we interact with others, we can't possibly expect Hashem to reward us with a final redemption. In the merit of the righteous women, our forefathers were redeemed from Egypt. It has happened before, it can happen again, and it will happen again. Let's hope that as a community, we can strengthen our Ahavas Yisrael and merit to see the final redemption, b'mhera b'yameinu. Thank you all for coming, and Gemar Chasima Tova.